welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 9, 2020. The government of South Sudan cancels permission for the UN mission in South Sudan to test its staff for COVID-19.
We got surprised, the police in the national security apprehended a couple of people. They are about carrying a certificate, the test results of COVID that are issued in the UN clinic, carrying the UN logo, and of course this is not something that we have agreed.
And how are street children surviving during the COVID-19 pandemic in South Sudan?
We don't have the face masks. Sometimes we pick the ones which have been used already. So we need help, especially with soap for washing our hands.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's health ministry has cancelled permission for United Nations mission in South Sudan to test its staff for COVID-19. The ministry's COVID-19 incident manager says UNMISS will no longer be allowed to test its staff for the virus or issue COVID-19 certificates. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
The incident manager for COVID-19 at South Sudan's Ministry of Health, Dr. Richard Laku, says the government has cancelled a memorandum of understanding signed with the UNMISS to allow the mission to test its staff. Dr. Laku says security officers at Juba International Airport confiscated UN-issued COVID-19 certificates from UN staff who tested negative.
So we got surprised, the police in the national security apprehended a couple of people. They are about carrying a certificate, the test results of COVID that are issued in the UN clinic, carrying the UN logo, and of course this is not something that we have agreed. And the national task force felt that it is not right, and let the public health retain the powers and the responsibility.
In a communication on August 26, seen by South Sudan in Focus, the task force said it confirmed an allegation that UNMISS was issuing COVID-19 free certificates to staff. The task force said, quote, "This act contravenes the agreement between UNMISS and the Ministry of Health. Henceforth, the Public Health Laboratory is urged to withdraw the authority from UNMISS with immediate effect," end of quote. South Sudan in Focus contacted Francesca Mold, UNMISS Chief of Communications and Public Information, for comment. Mold declined to have her comments recorded. Instead, she sent an email to explain the memorandum of understanding signed with the Ministry of Health. She said, quote, "A memorandum of understanding was signed by UNMISS and the Ministry of Health in June that enables the mission to carry out PCR tests on staff for COVID-19 that are provided to the Ministry of Health for countersigning and stamping," end of quote. Moll added UNMISS takes swabs from its staff, which are sent to the Ministry of Health for testing and public reporting. "Any additional tests that we do on our own staff for internal purposes are also shared with the Ministry of Health," end of quote. Dr. Laku says the agreement signed with UNMISS grants UNMISS the right to test UNMISS staff suspected of having COVID-19 as part of ongoing efforts to fight the pandemic, but it did not grant the mission the right to print COVID-19 free certificates.
"We get them only to focus on following up those who are positive with COVID, and that who we are diagnosing positive with COVID, so that we make sure that we follow them until they get negative, so they can use that in experts to follow and then reduce the load to the lab."
The incident manager for COVID-19 says the task force saw at least 10 COVID-19 free certificates issued by UNMISS, which security operatives collected from UNMISS staff at Juba International Airport. The first case of COVID-19 in South Sudan was announced after an international staff of the United Nations traveled to the country from the Netherlands. South Sudan's first Vice President Riek Machar announced in April that 29-year female who arrived from Ethiopia on February 28th tested positive for COVID-19 in April. In early July, UNMISS Chief David Sierra told VOA that 57 workers with the mission in South Sudan tested positive for COVID-19 since April. He claimed staffers could have contracted the virus due to what he called continued close interactions with the South Sudanese population. The South Sudan Ministry of Health has so far recorded a total of 2,555 positive cases, including 1,317 recoveries and 48 deaths. There are more than 27 million COVID-19 positive cases worldwide, including over 890,000 deaths from the virus, according to the World Health Organization. The United States and India top the list of countries with the highest number of confirmed cases. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu.
Some children living on the streets of South Sudan's capital, Juba, say they do not know how to protect themselves from COVID-19. The children say they have not seen any changes on the streets of Juba since the government announced the outbreak of COVID-19 in South Sudan. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
A weary-looking Marial Athari sells empty water bottles at Juba Custom Market to earn a few South Sudanese pounds. The 18-year-old says he and other young South Sudanese who live on the streets sleep together, eat together, and do not have masks or hand sanitizers to protect themselves against COVID-19. Asari says they have not received any assistance from either the ministries of health or gender and social welfare or even any humanitarian groups. Asari says street kids do not know how to avoid being infected by COVID-19.
We don't have the face masks. Sometimes we pick the ones which have been used already. So we need help, especially with soap for washing our hands. We also need help so that we can buy some things that will protect us against coronavirus.
20-year-old John Jemis, who also stays at Juba Custom Market, says he is aware that coronavirus is a dangerous disease. Jemis says he and other youth on the street rarely wash their hands before they eat something.
We are just staying like we used to do. This is what I have been telling you. We are not provided with the face masks, hand sanitizers, soaps, and water for washing our hands. At home, people wash their hands, but not in the markets. In the past, some organizations brought washing containers, but it was later destroyed.
14-year-old Wadeng Chol, who also lives on the street, says many street kids believe there is no coronavirus in South Sudan. Wadeng urges his friends to do what they can to protect themselves against the virus.
Many times people come to the market and we may not know whether they are infected or not. There are some of the big boys with us here in the market. Whenever I tell them about coronavirus or even inform them to wash their hands with soaps, they beat me up.
A social worker at South Sudan's Gender and Social Welfare Ministries agree that the ministry has done very little to protect street children. Fidencia Hilary Pitia, the director for child welfare at the State Ministry of Gender and Social Welfare, says departments of child protection in the national and state ministries have a duty to protect children against diseases, exploitation, and child labor. Pitia says her ministries have been educating street children and youth about coronavirus on radio talk shows.
We informed them not to stay in one place and that awareness campaign only happened once. Both the state and the national ministry have not visited the street children because of the limited budget.
Pitia says she is not sure if most street children are able to listen to radio talk shows on COVID-19, since most of the time they are busy doing manual jobs in the markets. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Moving to Khartoum, some families affected by floods in Sudan are appealing to the government and aid agencies to provide shelter, medicine and food to thousands of people whose houses were destroyed by floods caused by heavy rains. Some families say their houses have collapsed and they are living in the open. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Flooding caused by heavy rains has left thousands of homes submerged in water across the country. Nearly 100 people have died in the flood this year, the worst in the living memory. Last night, most houses in the Kalakala Guba neighborhood of Jebel Awliya along the White Nile River were underwater. Hundreds of families here are pleading for urgent humanitarian assistance. Residents have been seeking shelter in schools or have moved to an open-air places in higher ground. Lolita Ibrahim Abubakr, a mother of three, sits on a bed on higher ground, out in the open, after setting down chairs, cooking utensils, and a few other belongings. She was able to move out of her flooded house. She says one of her two rooms collapsed 2 days ago.
The situation is not good at all. As you can see, we are just staying in an open area. Our house has collapsed and all our belongings are inside. We manage only to get two beds. We have been staying here.
Mary John Wani is a South Sudanese national and a mother of five who lives in Guba neighborhood. Wani says the elderly are suffering from mosquito bites and she fears some of the displaced will contract waterborne diseases due to the stagnant water.
This flood surprised some of us at night, and some houses collapsed immediately. Families could not take much of their property from their rooms. We lost one of our young men here in our neighborhood. This is a big loss.
Both Ibrahim and Wani are calling on the humanitarian aid agencies to provide flood victims with mosquito nets, blankets, and medicines before things get worse. Ismail Muhammad, another Guba resident, says his compound is full of water, so he relocated his family to a higher floor in the same building. Muhammad says if more rain comes tonight or tomorrow, he may have to move his family again.
I accommodated another family here, but we don't know what's going to happen next. We're in desperate need of any support. We need any assistance we can get from any organization.
The Sudanese transitional government has declared a 3-month state of emergency. Sudan's Minister of Labor and Social Development, Lina Ashekh, said Friday that the country is experiencing a national crisis. Ashekh says more than 500,000 people have been affected and more than 100,000 homes have been destroyed or damaged, leaving hundreds of thousands of people homeless. Sudanese Minister of Irrigation and Water Resources, Yasir Abbas, says the Nile has recorded 17 meters and 67 centimeters compared to 17 meters in 1988, the last time Sudan had recorded heavy flooding. He says people should not construct buildings near the river.
When the level of the Nile water is high, it runs through the course as well as the flood layer. So when you construct a building or anything near the Nile, it will definitely be affected when the Nile is flooding, because the building is built near the course of the Nile. This is the main reason why Khartoum is affected so much more than any other town.
UNHCR, in coordination with the Sudan's Humanitarian Aid Commission, says it is distributing non-food items to some 170,000 men, women and children this month, including internally displaced persons. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, elections, violence in the birthplace of democracy. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your golden rule in life?
My golden rule is never to give up, no matter what, whether it's on family challenges, money problems, work related. I just never give up.
Golden rule. No, I don't allow men to play with my life. That is my golden rule. And I don't allow anyone to talk ill about my parents and my family.
Put God first, because in everything you need God. And as you know, the fearing of God is the beginning of knowledge.
Not to lie, I always want to base my living, everything I do, my speaking, my saying, in facts and truth.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A group of pro-Trump protesters attacked a group of Black Lives Matter protesters in the Flashpoint U.S. state of Oregon on Monday, the Associated Press and local media reported. Police made several arrests. Hundreds of people had gathered for a pro-President Donald Trump vehicle rally. The incident occurred just over a week after a member of a far-right group was shot and killed following similar vehicle caravan through Oregon's largest city of Portland. Police later shot and killed a suspect in that killing, who was an anti-fascist protester. Still in U.S., as the 2020 U.S. presidential race heats up, so do fears of voter repression and chaotic voting because of the coronavirus pandemic, heeding stark warning of problems ahead of the November 3rd Elections Day. Some U.S. companies aim to help employees to get to the polls. Faridah Jonah of Reuters has more.
As Election Day in the U.S. draws closer, companies are heeding the stark warnings about potential voter suppression in reduced polling locations and are being proactive to help facilitate what is expected to be a chaotic 2020 U.S. presidential election. Companies like Twitter and Apple are giving workers paid time off to get to the ballot box, while Starbucks and Old Navy are urging their staff to volunteer at local polling places. Other companies are taking a different approach. Businesses like Nike, Abbott Laboratories, and Qualcomm, along with 800 others, plan to participate in a CEO-led bipartisan activist group called Time to Vote, which encourages companies to give employees at least a few hours off to vote. Starbucks, concerned with Black voter suppression, is urging its over 200,000 U.S. employees register to vote from its mobile app. Starbucks chief executive Kevin Johnson said in an internal memo on August 27th, quote, "No employee will have to choose between working their shift or voting on or before Election Day." Rules securing time off for workers to vote vary by state. During these times, mail-in voting has emerged as an alternative for some. But bipartisan battles over expanding mail-in voting have threatened to snarl the political process. President Donald Trump for months has rallied against voting by mail, citing unfounded fraud concerns, and last week encouraged supporters to vote twice, once by mail and again in person, compounding the confusion ahead of Election Day. According to a voter survey by Pew Research, nearly half of voters fear difficulties with voting in the U.S. presidential elections.
A global coalition of 321 civil society groups from 60 countries are calling for China to face greater scrutiny for its alleged systemic and serious human rights violations. The group plan to demand an end to China's impunity at the UN Human Rights Council during the Council's upcoming session next week. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The group sent an open letter to the UN Secretary General and UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, raising its concerns about China's human rights record. The signatories stressed the need to address what they call rampant human rights violations across China, including in Hong Kong, Tibet, and the northwestern province of Xinjiang. China Director at Human Rights Watch, Sophie Richardson, says the sheer magnitude of the violations committed inside China and outside the country warrant a fundamental different response from the UN Human Rights Council.
It is high time the Chinese government actually had some sense that it would face consequences for doing things like continuing to arbitrarily detain a million people simply on the basis of their ethnic identity, and for a slew of other serious violations.
1 million, mainly Muslim Uyghurs, reportedly are incarcerated in so-called re-education camps in Xinjiang. In its statement, the coalition highlights China's efforts to distort the mandate of the UN Human Rights Council. It says China persecutes activists who seek redress from repression. It says the government in Beijing opposes initiatives to shine a light on its alleged serious rights violations and international crimes committed in countries around the world. The Chinese government rejects the UN's assessment of its human rights record as gross interference. Geneva Director at Human Rights Watch, John Fisher, says the UN needs to act on the growing chorus of voices calling for China to be held accountable for its rights abuses.
I think what has been striking around this appeal has been to see just so many NGOs from so many different countries, not just expressing concern at China's suppression of rights within its own borders, which are serious enough and warrant scrutiny on their own terms, but also the global impact of China's contempt for human rights.
The global coalition is calling for a special session of the Human Rights Council to explore the range of violations by China's government. It urges the Council to establish an impartial and independent UN mechanism to closely monitor and report on China's human rights situation annually. It says the UN must insist that the government comply with its international human rights obligations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to Cameroon, where Cameroon says Anglophone separatists have stolen thousands of cattle from ethnic Mororo ranges since July, forcing them to move livestock to more secure areas. Authorities say the rebels' cattle rustling appears to be motivated by food shortage. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports.
Forty-one-year-old Mororo rancher Sule Kela leads several hundred cattle to graze in the French-speaking village of Balamba in central Cameroon, near Bafia town. He says the cattle belong to five Mororo, an ethnic group of ranchers by tradition located mainly in Cameroon's northwest region. But Kela says the Mororo are fleeing the English-speaking region because Anglophone rebels are stealing their cattle.
Areas like Womb, Boy Division, Boyo Division, Mezam Division, there's no place where they have not seized cows from the Mororos. And when the military, they go out for their work, you see them bringing cows that were seized from the Mororo community. And then most of the Mororos have carried their cows right to the western regions, central regions.
President of the Mororo Cultural and Development Association, Boskuda, Jaji Manu Gidadu, has also moved his 400 cattle to the town of Bafia. Gidadu says rebels have stolen at least 3,000 cattle from Mororo ranchers since July. He says ranchers have relocated about 2,500 cattle to safer French-speaking towns like Bafia, to escape the rebels.
Why they are the target group is because those guys met the Boro people and asked them to join them to disturb the administration from functioning. And the Boro people told them, no, we are here to rear our cattle and send our children to school.
Cameroon's livestock ministry says since the separatist conflict began in 2016, the rebels seized about 300 cows each year. Cameroon's military says the rebels seem to be stealing more cattle these days because of food insecurity and to sell across the border in Nigeria to fund their revolt. To crack down on the rebels, the military says it has reinforced control along the border with Nigeria. Felix Nje Ewumbe is the officer in charge of helping ranchers in the western town of Bafusam. He says host communities should support the ranchers and their families.
Nous les encadrons au quotidien, c'est-à-dire.
Ewumbe says the government gives them financial and moral support and informs them of opportunities in neighboring towns and villages where they can sell their farm produce. Separatists took up arms in 2017 to carve out an English-speaking state from French-speaking majority Cameroon. The United Nations says the fighting has cost more than 3,000 lives and forced 500,000 to flee to French-speaking regions or into neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Bafia, Cameroon.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with some a cappella from Warab State.
Balul kakany ngam dogo denga dengu chani makor ke ma jogene chakud bedong ring. Mang arwa na gwane jaga kirir ti ma chitu edwiru wana tak jing kir bu wari jang nganyi kap. Vea diar ke getiaj goro ke ma ngara gwa ma ngar chilonj ke war ke garej ma ngong chibuang tuanj pinye tig tar kalabong pinye chwar. Kany ngam dogo denga dengu chani makor ma jogene chakud bedong ring. Among Adia Kumanyanga gone yard, Manyanga gone yard in a toad boab, Kalakwa gone yard, Kalakumangadia boab gao, Kalakuanagala. Kang, I'm dog ding a ding with Chana Makor, my jog and a chakud bedung ring. Mang Adin a thong tarkekawar chop ding, my yum ding a ding a bedding by Kulegu Chamra back in your wall. Bumila can you wall, be chock egg long, not going to chongwan, naked goodman. Kang, I'm dog ding a ding with Chana Makor, my jog and a chakud bedung ring. Do da lala na chamara jibitiga na thiej wana goma kwe wa madhwa na e dingi kengmuk. Ka yiga ntoka na chitho ka changu itol bilwek. Gwal ka she dingi ka tong ma. Kany ngam dogu dingi dingu chana makor ma jogo na chakud budong ring. Chathud bu ma na shada dal kulele nyandia na ya goma ngare nchi jathuda thude gaya gaya goma ngare dili dil kanikan. Kany ngam dogu dingi dingu chana makor ma jogo na chakud budong ring. Areja kon mangara rej mongong chibuang tuanj pinyi tik tar kalapa loj pinyi chwar. Ena cha tom cha malenga kolo bangara ba yug maara parij bu wiji wunye libir. Kaj ngam dogu denga dengu chana makor ma joga na chakudu bedong ring. Mangadi yoku manyanga chan magiat chan deng makuoja cha maj kokera langda wapi lupi lawer. Ache mingor chin mekera wan. Kaj ngam dogu denga dengu chana makor ma joga na chakudu bedong ring. Among Adena Shulta, the Chidia, the Adiar, Wang Chiang Tin. Kang, I'm dog ding a ding with Chana Makor, my jog and a chakud bedung ring. Mangara quam lun yogubu, roguga jayo, go to yo. Kukamir, rub mum go, kiamanagong, a la la kojemu. Mangara gumakwe, a gon ilual nweg yog, and
we've been listening to some a cappella from a musician in a corn village. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking your time to listen to this program. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, wear a mask if you must leave your home, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus.
Among our jog dear Nagel Finida, we can water be a more dear Palarak. And for again, Quaker, Lord Point, Macalden took. ye long wa di yar ye war yar du da be wala na go mari ala go ni yor ma bil ku ye ne loj fi anum bla ma wala ni yor.